You're listening to the Wesley Seminary Podcast. Your host today is Dr. Aaron Perry, Associate Professor of Pastoral Theology and Leadership.
Denominationalism is over. So said Will Willimon about 10 years ago. And I reference that in today's podcast because today's conversation maybe challenges that a little bit. Or does it? Today's guest has that unique ability to see things from a variety of points of view and to articulate them all well. I've been learning from and following and really appreciating the ministry, leadership, and service of today's guest for a number of years since coming on the staff here at Wesley Seminary and running across his path in ministry. But today is a special treat because we get to talk about his doctoral research. Now, why this applies to you is that we're going to talk about governing bodies. Now you say, well, how does that apply to me or why is that important? Well, stay tuned for the episode because in today's episode, we are going to talk about why belonging to wider communities matters for pastors. In today's episode, you're going to hear a man who is passionate about systems doing their job, which is to provide service to those belonging beneath them. Higher order systems exist to serve lower order systems, and today's guest is intent on making sure that happens. Today's guest is a friend of mine, Dr. Chris Williams. Chris is lead pastor at Lakeview Wesleyan Church. He's a graduate of Indiana Wesleyan University and Wesley Seminary. And he recently completed his PhD from Columbia University studying just what we're going to talk about today, which is middle judicatories. If you're like me, you're like, I think I know what that means, but can I be reminded? Don't worry, we're going to talk about what middle judicatories are. And now you're going to have a sense, hopefully, of why these are important or how they can be effective. Chris also serves as the assistant district superintendent in the Crossroads District of the Wesleyan Church, and he is an adjunct professor at Indiana Wesleyan and Wesley Seminary. Stay tuned for a word from our sponsor and then enjoy the podcast.
Wesley Seminary prepares Christian leaders to engage in missional ministry locally and globally through fully online Masters of Ministry, Masters of Divinity, and Doctor of Ministry programs. Learn from professors who will help you grow in your knowledge of scripture, theology, and church history with the goal of applying what you learn from the local ministry. Journey with a spiritual formation cohort made up of students from around the world that take their own ministry experience and challenge you to sharpen your ministry skills and deepen your spiritual formation. Wherever you are, in whatever way you serve in ministry, we want to serve you. We are Wesley, and you belong here.
Welcome to the Wesley Seminary Podcast, Dr. Williams. It's great to have you with us.
It's good to be here, Dr. Perry. So excited to have this opportunity to have this conversation with you today. I've been looking forward to it and looking forward to where our conversation will go.
Maybe the best way to start things off is just for you to tell us a little bit about you and your current focus in ministry. Because if people know you, they know you're in a variety of things. But if not, I think that what we talk about will be well established and introduced just by you telling us what are some of the ministries that you are involved in right now.
Yeah, so my full-time job is to serve as the lead pastor at Lakeview Wesleyan Church in Marion, Indiana. And so I get to lead a church of about 250 people. We have a Christian school that's kindergarten through eighth grade. And then we have a counseling center that employs about 10 or 11 full-time counselors serving people all across our county and the surrounding areas. So I spend most of my time doing that. But I also get to serve in the Crossroads District of the Wesleyan Church as an assistant district superintendent. And so I get to come alongside of pastors and local churches, get to work in leadership development and facilitating strategic planning for local churches, and really just help local congregations become more effective. And so when I'm not working as a lead pastor, I'm helping out churches in the Crossroads District. And then in my spare time, I get to serve as an adjunct professor at Indiana Wesleyan University in the School of Theology and Ministry and at Wesley Seminary in teaching courses there as well.
I wanted you to give a bit of that background because it shows that you're actively involved in really the practicalities of ministry. This is not something you're simply thinking about in an abstract way. You're on the ground. You're doing this as a practitioner in the church. You're doing this as an administrator. So what we're going to talk about has deep connections to your practical ministry and responsibilities. I think the first time I met you or that I can remember connecting with you was I had been given your name as somebody who would be a good person to help orient students. So way back before COVID, like another lifetime ago, we had students on campus here and they were doing their very first class, Pastor, Church, and World. And I had invited you to come in as an alumni and kind of give some tips, right? How were you successful in the seminary? What were some of the things? And I was like, man, this guy's got some good ideas. Like I can learn from him in this. It was just great. I mean, it was easy to see your methodical, analytical, practical mind at work. And so when I heard what you had done your doctoral studies on, I was like, this would be a great conversation. Chris would be a great guest for the podcast. So you recently did complete your doctorate studying, here's a great term that I don't think I've ever used, middle judicatories and how pastors experience such organizations and structures. All right. So we had the practical introduction just because middle judicatories might not be everyday language for our listeners. So would you tell us first what this means and why you wanted to undertake this study?
Yeah, so middle judicatory is one of those fancy terms that you put in the title of your dissertation to help people think that you are more academic maybe than you really are. You know, it is a term that is used to kind of describe the regional administrative body inside of a denomination. And since denominations use different terms like diocese or synod or district, just as a few examples, rather than try to pick one of those terms and hope people can make the connection, we chose to use a term that described kind of the broader idea across a bunch of different denominations. And so middle judicatory is just defined as that regional administrative body that really coordinates the work of local congregations in a particular geographic region. And the reason I wanted to kind of study that is because our denomination, the Wesleyan Church that I've been a part of since I was born, has been walking through a period of time where we're trying to figure out the best way to structure this component of our denomination. We have three different levels of our denomination, as most denominations do. You've kind of got that national or international level, you've got that local congregational level, and then the connecting point between those two is that middle judicatory level. In the Wesleyan Church, we call them districts. And I've worked in a couple of district offices. I worked in the Chesapeake District Office for the Wesleyan Church, and then most recently have been spending time, obviously, working with the Crossroads District of the Wesleyan Church, and really do believe that the emphasis of the district is to help local churches succeed in the mission of Christ. As I watched our denomination over these last several years consider different ways that they could structure this part of our denomination to increase its effectiveness, I realized that we didn't know a lot about these new structures and systems and how they were going to work. And so when I was looking for something to dig into for my PhD research, I just decided that this was the best way I could spend my energy to study something that I believe is really, really important in helping our denominations and, more importantly, local churches succeed at a higher level.
I love the systems philosophy you've got in there, which is higher order systems exist to serve lower order systems. You develop complexity, not for the sake of complexity, but in order to serve those situations which are less complex, or at least in theory, less complex. The district exists to serve the local church. And of course, the local church is kind of a base gathering, but it also exists then to serve other communities and other groups that are formed. So the local church exists to serve families. The local church is present in a given location or locale to help enrich and bring life and structure and, of course, the gospel to a local connection. So I'm really resonating with some of the philosophy that you've already given to us. I also really resonated with the approach you took to studying these. You took an approach that wasn't strictly theoretical or theological, like why should these things exist? You studied how pastors experience them, right? You studied how people experience these kinds of bodies and maybe asking, do the pastors really experience them in these kind of supportive and enriching and resourcing ways? So tell us, what did you find out? Maybe you could tell us a little bit, what surprised you? Or did you have any kind of hunches that were confirmed? Or did you have any hunches that were totally blasted out of the water?
Yeah, so I definitely agree with what you said that the district exists to serve the local church. And in our denomination, as we started kind of experimenting with some new models, and one of those models being taking smaller districts, merging them together to form larger districts that would cover multiple states and have, a significant number of churches beyond anything that districts have had before in our denomination. It seemed like we were looking at it as a denomination from the kind of higher level of the organization. So we were thinking about budgets, operational efficiencies, programs that we were going to offer, things that we were going to be able to do, staffing and structure of district offices. All of those things are perfectly legitimate and ought to be considered. But as I was thinking about that, I realized that's not the only view inside of a denomination. There is another view from the person kind of at the most local level of the denomination, the local congregation, who is ultimately being served by these structures and efficiencies and staffing and programs. And I felt like we were thinking about how much money we were going to be able to save, which was going to allow us to redirect dollars into certain programs. All of that's great, but I was asking the question, how does this impact the local church pastor? Because we can make these organizational changes, and if we don't think through the unintended consequences of them, we might hurt the organization, even though we think we're helping it. I really designed my research to come at this from the pastoral level and conducted interviews with local church pastors who had experienced a district merger within the last 2 years. Talk to them about what it was like in their previous district, talk to them about what it was like to experience merger, and then talk to them about what it's like to be in this newly formed district that's been merged, from these pre-existing districts. And I would say that the particular region that I studied in our denomination, and by the way, just huge shout out to Chris Conrad, who is the district superintendent of the Great Lakes region, for his willingness to just kind of open up his district just 2 years after merger and say, come and study this, come and help us get better, figure out what could be done differently in the future as districts merge, and was just wide open and so helpful and so supportive. And I'm just very grateful for his investment in my own life and in this process. And so just a huge shout out to him. But as I started meeting with those pastors, I had a hunch that as most of the districts that were around before this merger, they might have, 30, 40, 50 churches, and this new district has 181. So it's a significant increase in size. And it went from, just being a part of a state or maybe covering one whole state to now covering all of Michigan, all of Wisconsin, all of Illinois. And that's a big geographic area. And so I had a hunch that pastors were going to be less connected. The organization just got significantly bigger. And of course, after merger, COVID hit, which confirmed the fact that pastors were going to feel less connected because we all felt less connected. We were all isolated from one another. And so that was something I had a hunch about, and it was actually borne out in the research. The interviews were pretty clear that pastors felt less connected to other pastors. Local churches felt less connected to other local churches. The surprising component, though, is that I expected if they felt less connected, that they would also feel less supported. And as I conducted the interviews, one of the most surprising parts of the research is that though pastors clearly felt less connected with other pastors and other local churches, and even less connected to their district office, they felt more supported by the district. And as I probed into that, because I didn't quite understand how those two things work together, what I discovered is that most of these pastors felt that the district in its new structure was able to invest dollars in programs and events and resources that were previously not available to pastors. So, for example, pastors referenced that the district bought me a membership to the Full Strength Network. My previous district couldn't have afforded to do that for us as pastors, But this new district invested dollars saved in that kind of a program. And as a result, pastor said, I can get counseling. My spouse can get counseling. My kids can get counseling. I've heard districts say that they value us and they support us. But this particular action, this initiative, really helped me feel that they truly did value me and were truly supporting me. And so the fact they felt less connected but more supported was very surprising in the research, but was clearly borne out as I conducted the interviews with those pastors.
I appreciate that example because I made a mental note to ask, well, what does support look like? Because support's one of those words that we use it a bunch of different ways, and it can have a bunch of different meanings. And maybe we could abstract out a more generalized concept, you know, yep. that somebody feels that somebody's got their back or something like that. But I appreciate the examples you've given. Were there other examples of support that you started to hear? I'm especially interested because, like you said, it was conducted with COVID being such an influencing factor. And yet the fact that support rang out, I'm wondering, were there other examples of support that pastors experienced?
One of the things that was a benefit of merger was the fact that a district could, instead of, you know, four or five districts employing five district superintendents, you merge districts together. Now you have one district superintendent, but you start to hire staff that can carry a specialty. And so a couple of the examples that were given by pastors of support were related to the fact that we had questions, you know, when the government came out with the PPP loans, the Paycheck Protection Plan, that they didn't know what to do. Should we do this program? Should we not do it? What are the implications of it? And the fact that the district actually provided for pastors, they brought an expert in, they had expert advice available to kind of the general district, but then one-on-one kind of coaching and consulting if individual churches had questions about it. Pastors referenced the fact that they did not believe that their previous district in some cases would have been able to necessarily secure that expert or provide that resource at that level of quality. And so for them to be able to say, yeah, look, we were able to have this kind of support because we're in this new, bigger entity that, quite frankly, can just do more because it has more resources.
I've got in mind The Gathering, which is coming up. So The Gathering, for those within the Wesleyan Church, they should be familiar. If they're not, that might be another situation to address. But The Gathering is a conference that happens every 4 years. We're asking all of the pastors to gather, right? Literally The Gathering. And there's a way of investing in, there's some fun. I've thoroughly enjoyed going to The Gathering. I bring this up because there is a cost to it and everybody's feeling the pinch, right? Everybody's feeling the rising cost of things and paychecks aren't going up, but the cost of gas, the cost of lodging, the cost of food, all of those things are going up. And they say, that looks like an interesting event, but it's one that we don't need to invest those dollars in. Now, I use that as an example, not to say like, hey, everybody should be going to The Gathering, but just because it's an example where people would say, do we or don't we? If there's significant cash flow, then maybe it's an easy yes to say, yeah, we're going to send the pastor to that. But if things are tight, then maybe they're like, that's one we could easily cut. Now, I give all of that as an example to ask this question. About 10 years ago, Will Willimon said something like this, that denominationalism is over, right? That sense of belonging to a wider body, a wider ecclesiastical body, that those loyalties and that season is over. The Gathering, of course, is trying to foster that very thing, right? That kind of belonging to a denomination. Why, in your research, did you find that a sense of organizational identity is important for the pastor?
That's a great question, and I think it's an important one. I think that, if by denominationalism we mean having a name that we can attach to our church or kind of a banner we can hang over the door, I think that that might be waning in our culture, may not be important or as important anymore. But I think that when you think about organizational identification, particularly in the way that I approach the research, organizational identification is required because pastors are human and they need a group that they can belong to. Even if you concede that Willimon's right, that the denomination is kind of waning, you would have to admit that pastors have not stopped needing groups and cohorts and networks that they can belong to, which would explain the rise of things like the Exponential Conference or, a CCDA conference or Mosaic. and just start to identify conferences and groups and networks. ARC, for example, the Association of Related Churches, or you think about a GROW conference at Church of the Highlands. Churches tend and pastors tend to gather in groups that they can identify with. Groups that they say, this group of people, they have some characteristics, some values, some goals, some behaviors, some distinctives that I think are valuable. And I want to imitate those and emulate those. And I actually want to see myself as part of that group. And by seeing myself as part of that group, I hope to get better and actually become one of those people in the group. And I think you see this in pastors, not because they need a denomination, but because they need a community. And I think that's what organizational identification is at its core. And the way I approached it from the research was kind of viewing it not as a study of organizations in the strictest sense of that term, but through social identity theory, which says there's a group I want to belong to. I like these people. I like the way they behave, the values, the goals, the characteristics. I want to see myself in that group and I want to imitate them. I want to become like them so that their values and their goals become my own. And I think we just need that as human beings. And so I think pastors need that kind of group that they can belong to, and they'll find it even if denominations cease to exist tomorrow.
I'm thinking about this in my own life. I was just away at a leadership educator academy. I'll name it because I had a good time at it. And one of the things that they are measuring in it is the sense of identity. So after every day, and then as a pre and post event surveys, they were asking, I see myself as a leadership educator, right? So there's a piece that the identity of the participants is being formed by the actual gathering. There were other professors there. There's also human resource development. There's also student development. There's a variety of people, but they were trying to see, is the identity of leadership educator being formed in that gathering? So I can see how the sense of social identity is being formed in the group that I'm attaching myself to, where I'm seeing my models, and who's emulating for me that which I want to become, or being that person from whom I can learn. So if that's what's happening to the participants as they're finding a group to belong to, and as human beings, we are grouping animals, right? We want to be in connections. Talk to me a little bit about, or to lay leaders, how does what you studied relate to the local church, or maybe even down into its ministries? I don't know if it will go that far or not, but how does it impact the local church that a lay leader could see?
Yeah, I think at my core, you know, even though I pursued doctoral research, at my core, I'm just a practitioner. I'm a pastor. I just want to lead an effective local church. And so as I was doing this research, you know, on a denomination and a district structure and interviewing pastors, I'm constantly thinking about how does this relate to the local church? And what I would say is, you know, just speaking to the local church and particularly the lay leaders, first and foremost, I think it's really, really important for a local church to have a clear identity. Who are you? What's your mission? What are you trying to accomplish? And that needs to be singular, right? It needs to be for our church in every expression, whether it's in small groups or worship services or various ministry components. We have this one overarching mission and vision that we're trying to accomplish. And why that's important is because if you don't have that, when you get down into ministries and small groups and various programs and events, if they are not serving that one singular mission and vision, then it is very easy for the church to, in essence, become just a confederation of loosely connected small groups and ministries and programs. And it's not very much of an organization. It's not actually trying to accomplish something and make a difference in the world. It's just serving a lot of special interest groups inside of the church. And so what I would say to lay people who may be in this conversation is, if you're in charge of leading a particular ministry or leading a small group, ask yourself the really tough questions of how does this thing that we are doing in this small group or this ministry program or this event that we're putting on, how does that help our church accomplish its mission and its vision? And if that's not a clear line, then you either need to reorient that so that there is a clear line, or you need to let that thing go, because the church has, and we know this now, maybe more than ever, coming out of a pandemic and living in inflationary times, we have very limited resources, people, time, and money, and we can't spend our time doing things that don't contribute to the overall mission and vision of the church and support its goals and values. I think that's the maybe hard truth of this, but I know right now in our local church, we are auditing every single ministry that we have and every single event that we do to make sure that we can draw a clear line between that event, that program, that ministry, and our overall mission and vision as a congregation, to make sure that we're using God's resources to the very best of our ability.
I want to bring this back to the systems theory that you began to espouse at the start, because in some ways this might feel like, oh man, isn't that hypercritical, right, to ask all these questions? But if the questions are not just being asked down, but also asked up, right, which is what you did, how do pastors experience middle judicatories? What effect does it have? If those questions are being asked up, then there's accountability that's going both ways, which is how things are supposed to go, right? The lower order system is asking questions of itself, but it's also asking questions of that which is above it. Like, is my leader fulfilling a role to help me do better at what my role is? I can put this in terms of servant leadership as a way to think about the role of the leader is to help the follower to thrive in what they've been given to do and what their responsibility is. And if this is done not in kind of hypercriticism, if it's done as a sense of faith, in a sense of believing that a person who's thriving at their role, when a ministry is thriving, that it's going to be something that's creating momentum and life is going to be spilling out of it. It's going to have a lift effect across the local church or across local churches, whatever the wider context is, then you can see how this can be an act of love, right? So we're not asking questions in order to have this critical spirit or to criticize. We're asking questions, we're engaging in critical thinking as an act of love. Chris, you are a pastor. You've got your finger on the pulse of the district that you're in and finger on the pulse of the denomination that you're in. Of course, a denomination that we share. I'd love for you to have a final word to any one of these. Pick one of these groups, to pastors, local church, the Wesleyan church as a whole. What would you say to them from your pretty unique vantage point?
You know, as I think about pastors, I think the most important thing for a local church pastor to do is to make sure that he or she is thriving as a follower of Christ. I think everything flows from that. When Jesus called the disciples, he called them to be with him so that he could send them out. And I think prioritizing being with Christ as the foundation and kind of the fountainhead of everything else we do in life is critically important. If the leader isn't thriving, if the leader isn't healthy, if the leader isn't vibrant, there's no way that the congregation will outpace the spiritual health and vibrancy of their leader. They will follow the example that is in front of them. I always say to pastors, any chance I get, however much you think you need to work on your spiritual life, work on it more, because it's really critical that you are thriving and alive spiritually so that you can shepherd your people well. And to local churches, you know, I just say to them, we have a mission, and our mission field is right where we're at. You know, we used to, when we talked about missions a long time ago, we would talk about leaving here and going somewhere else. And that's still a very important part of missions. But the mission field is now right at our doorstep. And the gospel gap, particularly in North America, continues to grow. And so it's really, really critical for churches to recognize the urgency and the stewardship entrusted to their care, to do whatever you can to reach maximum effectiveness as a church so the people in your local mission field can be one to Christ. And that's what it means to be a faithful congregation, right? Follow Jesus and fish for people. You know, those are the words of Jesus himself. And so my encouragement, leaders, make sure you're thriving. And churches, make sure you're doing whatever you can to increase and maximize your missional effectiveness.
I love the way that you started that with the call of Christ was to be with him. Maybe you got this from our friend and colleague, John Drury. He's got a great devotional on it about the first call of God is to be with him. I'm prepping to preach from the Gospel of Luke and the account of Martha and Mary. And I find it really powerful in that account. Mary risks the offense by sitting at Jesus' feet. So offensive to her culture that she, a woman, would be in this place of discipleship. It's obviously offensive to her sister, because her sister takes offense. But because Martha is so intent on doing, she doesn't risk the offense of the culture, but she risks challenging the honor of Jesus with these words, "Don't you care? Don't you care?" And here's what sticks out to me. The conversation we have is not Jesus ignoring her or dismissing her. It's not even continuing to talk to Mary, who's in the discipleship realm. It's he talks to Martha. You know, maybe she's just continuing on to scurry and be busy and do things for him because she's making the meal so that she can host him well. She has the phrase, "Don't you care? Don't you care?" which is a phrase that you can hear in any number of ways in the Psalms. And of course, the psalmist is going to say over and again that what the Marthas of the world are actually seeking is not just help to do for Jesus. What the Marthas of the world are seeking is Jesus himself, right? The heart that we've got is for God. Yeah, it's so tempting to be busy doing things for Christ. It's so tempting to be doing and active and engaged in changing the world, right? And in creating ministries and in asking the critical questions, right? Doing this analysis. But we have to remember that underneath all of that, the cry of our heart, the yearning that we have is to be with God. Joining us today has been Dr. Chris Williams. Pastor Chris is the pastor at Lakeview Wesleyan Church, and he's been talking to us about middle judicatories and the effect and the experience of these bodies on people in local church leadership. Pastor Chris, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thanks for having me. It's been a joy to have the conversation with you, and I hope it's helpful.
Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. You make conversations like this possible. The Wesley Seminary podcast exists to introduce topics and resources for fruitful ministry. I trust we've done just that today. If you agree, like and subscribe, share this episode around on your various social media platforms. Thanks so much, Connor, for being a great teammate. I appreciate the way that you work to make the podcast run as smoothly as it does. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. Have a great day.
Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under the name Wesley Seminary.